So take a load off. I don't want anybody to sit there today and, you know, feel like anybody's looking at you or the weight of the world's on you. We all have our stuff. So here's how we're going to start off. I want you to turn to the next person next to you and say, we all have our stuff. Just turn to the person. Make sure you say, just turn. Don't, oh, okay, like you're not going to do it. You do it. We all have our stuff. All right. It's an issue. The church hasn't been very helpful in it because they like to back away from it and not talk about it. You know, Christianity specifically, here's how they've handled it through the years. Starting in the 3rd century all the way to the 10th century, for 700 years, here's what the church decided, and check this out. I want to read this to you. Here's a bit of church history on the topic, rules for sex. Between the 3rd and 10th centuries, the church issued rules to forbid husband and wives having sex on Thursdays, because that was the day Christ was arrested. Then on Fridays, because that was the day of his death. And then on Sundays, out of remembrance of the saints. And then eventually the church said no sexual relations between husband and wives during the 40 days of Lent. And then no sex during the 40 days of Christmas. And then during the 40 days of Easter. By the time the church got done with it, there was only 44 days a year where husband and wives could have sex. Now, some of you married couples are going, are you crazy? That's a nightmare. 44 days. And some of you guys are like going, 44 days, that'd be an improvement. Where can I get that calendar? The issue is like this whole idea of what's okay wasn't okay. Like, how does sex turn up in our lives? And we get stuff from culture. We get stuff from our families. We're influenced by our friends. And today, just wanting to get God's perspective, write the big idea down in your notes. God designed sex to be a powerful physical and emotional connection, to share love. Physical and emotional connection to share love. That's the topic. Now, I picked a letter today for us to get sort of God's perspective. It's a portion of a letter that was written way back in the days during Jesus' time, and is written by a person I thought would be interesting to read, because he lived in a city called Corinth. This is a really super large city, and it was a Roman city. It was kind of in the southern part of Greece, and it was a Roman city. And this city that he lived in had abandoned all rules when it comes to sex. When he lived there, there was no rules. There was no guidelines. This city had tried an experiment. They said, when it comes to sex, everything goes. And that's the city he lived in. And I also thought it would be an interesting perspective, because Paul was a person that came from a very religious background. So he grew up in a very religious family. They had religious rules when it came not only to sex, but to everything, diet, clothing, you know, how you spend your money, very religious. He was Jewish, and he grew up in the Jewish church. And at some point, he realized that what he was placing in his hope wasn't working any longer. And maybe you know someone like that. Maybe you know someone super, super religious, and you can kind of sense that they're starting to realize this isn't working. I thought this would help me with all my relationships, and it's not. I thought it would cause me to feel like I'm forgiven and I can have a clean slate, and it isn't. And at some point, Paul starts figuring it out, and he makes an exchange of religion for relationship with Jesus, and now he's living in this city of Corinth. Some refer to it as the Las Vegas of its day. No rules when it comes to sex. And he's living there, and he went there to tell people about the Jesus story, and there's some people that start to become Christians. And then after he moved away, he writes a letter back, because they get a hold of him, these new Christians, that said, what are we supposed to do? Like, what rules are we supposed to follow? So he writes a letter back to them, and they actually put it in the Bible, but we're going to read some parts of it. Now, in your notes today, I put the whole letter, so a portion of the letter, but we're just going to look at chunks as we go through it today to try to get God's perspective. So number one in your notes, right? What is God's perspective? Let me read you a little bit of the letter. There's more to sex than mere skin on skin. Sex is much a spiritual mystery as a physical fact. As written in the scripture, the two become one. Since we want to become spiritually one with the Master, we must pursue the kind of sex that avoids commitment and intimacy, leaving us more lonely than ever. We must not pursue the kind of sex that avoids commitment and intimacy, leaving us more lonely than ever. The first thing he says is, it's not merely skin on skin. And probably what he's getting at is to remind them that sex also includes babies are born. When you live in a culture where sex just becomes about fun and recreation, you forget procreation. You forget that babies come from sex and people come from babies. That's part of the process. And one of the things that can be very hurtful is when you feel like you were unplanned, or even worse, unwanted. And I understand the problem. My parents weren't married, and for whatever reasons they were having sex for, it was not to have me. And it came up sometimes as I grew up. It would get shot out in a statement. And it did hurt. And it did cause me to question if I'm supposed to be here, or if nobody planned me out or wanted me. And if you relate to that, because that is a part of our culture, can I say this to you? This is something that I've discovered, that all life is a gift. And every baby is a gift from God. And if someone didn't plan you out, God did. Here's what I've discovered about my life. The whole thing didn't catch God by surprise, and he had to throw some kind of a plan together because I arrived. He has a plan for me. He's had a road for me to walk. He's had a story for me to be in, regardless of someone that was human planned for me or not. And Paul, this person now, he's saying from God's perspective, remember, it's not just skin on skin. Babies come and they arrive. And part of understanding from God's perspective, too, is that it's not just physical, it's also emotional and spiritual. That it's a powerful connection it's a very powerful physical connection. We all know that. But it's also a powerful emotional connection, spiritual connection. We cycle through so many things in our culture. When I grew up, I don't know if you remember this, but when I grew up, there was the first base, second base, third base home run thing that everybody talked about. It's like, what base did you get to? And that was the big thing back then. It has changed so much. I mean, you remember what they were. I'm not going to tell you, but now it's almost like first base is sex, and second base is a date, and third base is maybe we'll be exclusive to each other, and maybe home run is married. It's like it's completely reversed now. When I was a kid, it wasn't like that, even a teenager. And then, there was this scare that happened in the 80s, and it seemed like, man, that's going to really make, sexual practices be much more strict, and people are going to be way more careful, but shockingly, it didn't. I mean, in the 90s and early 2000s, our culture went through a huge cycle of casual sex. It was amazing. I mean, people were hooking up all over the place, and it was just very physical. It was just skin on skin. And then recently, casual sex, because of the Me Too movement and other things, people are saying, casual sex didn't work, because I ended up at the end of it feeling like I was asked to do something I didn't want to, or maybe at the time I thought I did, but later I wished I hadn't, or somebody put me in a situation I didn't want to be in, and thank God, literally, for the Me Too movement. Thank God that some of that stuff is coming out. And it's not going to be perfect. But thank God. The Bible says some people's sins go before them and some comes after. I mean, that's just kind of blowing the whole thing out so people are realizing, hey, you just can't, just because it's casual, it doesn't make it right. And it's transitioning now. People are realizing, well, just because we made it a casual thing, it was just physical. Afterwards, I was like, no, I'm not okay with this. So now the big thing is consensual sex. That's a huge thing in our culture now. You probably know that. It's like it's not casual anymore. Now it's consensual. Now it's you have to ask permission. So it doesn't mean, we're going to, ask people permission, you're going to tell me what you're going to do, it's going to be very structured, and it's going to be consensual, and the idea is that that's going to work. That's because really, the culture says it's just physical. So if you're asking permission, and I'm saying yes, and we're all in agreement on this, then it's going to be okay. There's a woman that has a website called Modern Love. She wrote an article in the New York Times that's pretty racy. I can't read it all today, but she wrote an article in there. And she was one of the forerunners of this idea of consensual sex. It can't be casual anymore. It has to be consensual. That's what's going to protect us. She writes an article for the New York Times, and in this article, in the beginning of it, she outlines this relationship that she has with a young man. He takes an Uber over to her house. He's super, super polite. He's dressed just how she likes. He is the type of person that totally has been trained to consensual sex. He asks if he could just hold her hand, and it's just this awesome thing. It's so funny as she goes through it. She says it's so funny because at one point she's like, man, you know, obviously if I let you do this is going to be okay, but you keep asking. But he's like saying, hey, I understand. It has to be consensual. And then she writes this article afterwards. And I'll just let you listen to it and you can decide. She writes this. As he left, he laughed and kissed me and said, see you soon. But I didn't see him soon. I texted him a few times that day and the following day, playfully at first, then more pressing, but he ignored me. At first, I couldn't believe he didn't answer, and then I was devastated. My roommates didn't understand why this was so much different, and it hurt this time. Because he kissed the soft part of my arm, I said, and then he disappeared. They looked at me blankly because he asked for my consent over and over, so sex felt like a sacred act, and then he disappeared. A sacred act, one roommate said, laughing. Girl, you don't treat it like one, but I do. We perform sacred acts all the time among strangers. We give charitably to people we don't know. We pray in church with people we don't know. When he asked so many times about my desires, when he checked in to be sure he was honoring and respecting me, then sex, however short-lived, became reciprocal. But the moment we pulled on our jeans, that reciprocal honor and respect was broken. Which is fine, my roommate said, and she was right, in a way. Asking about my feelings during sex didn't extend to caring about them after sex. Consent is not a contract for continuation. Now remember, this is someone on her website, not coming from God's perspective, not a Christ follower that I know of. She's coming from the perspective of consensual sex is going to be what helps us. This is what we should adopt as a culture. That's what she's writing. But in the days and weeks after, I was left thinking, in the New York Times, this article, that our culture's current approach to consent is too narrow. A culture of consent should be a culture of care for the other person and seeing and honor another person's humanity. It should be a culture of making each other feel good, not bad. If that's the goal, then consent doesn't work if we regulate it exclusively to the sexual realm. Our bodies are only one part of the complexity of who we are. To base our culture on consent of the body alone is to expect that caretaking involves only the physical. I wish we could view consent as something that's less about caution and more about care for the other person, the entire person, both during an encounter and after. Then, when we're most vulnerable, it might be different. Because I don't think many of us would say yes to this question. Is it okay if after I act like I care about you, I then disappear? That's the cycle we're in right now. And friends and family and people that you know, that may be your position as well. That's the culture we're moving into right now, that as long as it's agreed upon, as long as there's consent there, then it's going to be safe. But here's the problem. From God's perspective, it's emotional and spiritual. It's not just physical. One of the reasons it leaves so many marks as we grow up, things that happen when we were kids and we think, oh, I'll get past that, is because it's emotional. spiritual. And from God's perspective, there's a better way. Back to Paul, when he writes back to these people in Corinth, and it's like he says to him, he says, listen, when it comes to sex, the way God has designed it, is sex makes you closer and closer and closer and closer and closer and closer. He goes, do you really want to run around lonely all the time? Don't you notice the people that are having sex everywhere? Don't you notice how lonely they seem? Because I believe that sex is something for married people. I've taken a lot of heat over the years, for sure, from couples that'll talk with me, and they'll always say, well, you know, you're too strict, or this or that. And to which I always say, well, do you have a better idea? To which they always say, yes, if we're in love with each other, then it's perfectly okay to have sex. To which I say, are you sure you want to get closer and closer and closer and closer to somebody without having the stability and the security of a committed marriage relationship? Because it's a huge emotional and spiritual connection. And that's what Paul is saying. He's saying it's not just skin on skin. It is hugely physical, but it's beyond that. And in the context of commitment, someone that's going to stay with you, that's where it's experienced in a way that is secure and safe. God's perspective. Now, number two, and write it in your notes, what needs to change and how do I need healing? And I'm just putting that out there because sometimes I know in my life when I get God's perspective, I see his perspective and then I see mine, and it forces me, or at least implies or asks me to be open to, is there anything that needs to change? And understand this about Eastlake. You don't have to change a thing to be in this church. It's a church for everyone. So there's no cards to get in here. There's no, you know, we don't check your morality at the door. I've said this a million times. The minute they let me in, it set the bar pretty low. So you're good. When we get God's perspective, it opens up an opportunity to make some decisions, not to feel like you can belong or attend or be with us. Please understand that. The worst thing that could happen today is somebody would leave and feel ashamed and say, well, I can't go to that church. Nothing could be further from the truth. We started this entire movement to be a place where anybody can be. And yet at the same time, to get God's perspective and say, well, sometimes when I get his perspective, it opens up my eyes and I go, well, maybe that's why I'm troubled. Maybe that's why I'm hurting. Maybe that's the healing that I need. And from his perspective, I wanted to just show you an example today of kind of what it's like. If you take this guitar right here, And this is my son's guitar, and his wife gave this to him as a gift. I'm a terrible guitar player, so I'm not even going to try. But this is awesome. And this is actually a super, super nice guitar. So I'm holding it with great care, an expensive guitar. But I remember the first guitar that we gave my son. He hadn't played guitar at all, my wife and I, and his grandparents. He got this guitar. It was really cool. And he started playing guitar. He was a beginner with the guitar. And you know, whenever you, like with a guitar, you get a guitar and you're a beginner at it, you don't know how to play it, and you find out whether you're good at it or not. You have some aptitude. Kind of the same with sex. This is crazy, but some people are better at it than others. They have a greater aptitude. It just comes more natural to them, and that's the way it goes. Hope you married someone like that, but maybe not. But I'm just saying, I mean, you know, you get a guitar and you start playing it and you do music. And what's really cool about a guitar like this, you know, is that this can bring a lot of joy and it can be relaxing. And I mean, think of all, I mean, we come in here and like he's up here playing this guitar and they're going like crazy. And isn't it, it's a lot of fun to come in and sing when someone's playing the guitar and you get closer to God. It's awesome. And as long as, you know, it doesn't matter if you're great or not great, you can have so much fun with this guitar if you want to play guitar. And this was designed to make music and to play. But can you imagine if somebody took this guitar right here, they had this guitar, and they decided that in 3 weeks, they noticed the snow up on the mountains, and in 3 weeks they decided, I'm going to take this guitar, and in 3 weeks I'm going to go sledding with it. That's what I'm going to do. And so they get their girlfriend or their wife or somebody, and they run up into the mountains in about a month, and there's snow everywhere, and they pull out this exact same guitar. And they take it to the very top of the hill, and they sit it down, and they sit on front, and their girlfriend gets on back, and they start to scooch down the hill, and it's like, this isn't very much fun. And you can get angry or frustrated or blame people. Stupid guitar. But if you use this as a sled, if you use it for something it's not designed for, you do find out that it doesn't work very well. Now look what Paul writes to them. Run away from every kind of wrong sex. Circle that if you have notes. Sorry to tell you, but there's wrong sex. You know, sex is a blast and it's so much fun. But imagine if you're the girl and all of a sudden you get pregnant and, you know, somebody shows up and says, whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, if you're keeping the baby, I'm out. That's no fun. That's when this becomes a sled. Imagine if you're a single girl. I always tell the single girls in the church, because sometimes single girls feel pressure to have sex, or they want to have sex. They feel like they got to have sex because, you know, guys are so crazy and girls can be this way. They feel like, well, I got to find out if we're sexually compatible. I'm always like, give me a break. If she's a girl and you're a boy, you're compatible. Jeez, that's so crazy. But I'm just saying, I mean, we've got to find out. It's like, you know, if we're going to get married, I got to find out if we're sexually compatible. I always tell the girl this, I said, listen, if you want to find out about marriage and compatibility, find some boy that you can talk to all night long. I tell the boy, find a girl you can talk to all night long without having sex. Because when you get married, you'll do a lot more talking than you're going to be having sex. That's how you find out if you're compatible. Single people get pressured in churches and religions to go get married because a lot of religions say you can't have sex till you get married, and so they get all hot and they're going to have it, so I got to go get married. They run off and get married because, man, if I get married, I can have sex. Getting married to have sex is like buying a plane ticket to get the free peanuts. It does not make a lot of sense. You can use this like a sled. And it can see, sleds are made of wood and so are guitars. This is designed to be a guitar to play music on. Now, you may have been involved in something before and you found out the hard way, or someone forced you or something happened. You're like, hey, man, you don't have to preach to me. I get it. I've been on the guitar as a sled. And God can heal. He can help you forgive. Do you know the hardest thing for me? And I'll put something out there that needs to be said but not easy to say. The hardest thing for me, for some of the things that happened to me as a kid, was to forgive the people. But the really difficult thing was to ask God to forgive me for how much I hated them. I thought I came a long way when I was able to forgive them. I was like, I didn't ask for this. They shouldn't have done this to me. And I thought I came a long way when I was just, okay, God, I'm willing to forgive them. And then I realized I was bitter and spiteful and hateful because somebody had made me ride a guitar. And later, God showed me, he said, I can take that too. If you don't want to be filled with bitterness and hate, you can come before me and you can say, I hate that person for what they did to me, God. And I'm sorry, would you forgive me? And it was like he was able to extract the hate from me. And I want to tell you something, that's a process, because there for years, if somebody would have come up to me and said, you need to ask God to forgive you for your hate, I'd say, step back. Tell me, you know what they did to me? They're lucky I forgave them. But I realized that God had more for me. He could forgive me for what I became on the inside because of what was done to me. And I stand before you today and say, I am free of that. That's how far he goes. What changes need to happen in your life? Who do you need to forgive? What got twisted inside you, and God wants to forgive you? You didn't deserve it. You didn't mean it. But he wants to set you free. You would have never, ever asked for it to occur that way. But it did. And you can not only forgive, you can be forgiven to be free. And that's what he's saying to them in this letter. He's saying, whoa, I lived there. I saw all the stuff that went down. I saw how these people were. And there is going to need to be giving forgiveness and asking forgiveness now. Now the third thing is, and write it in your notes, how do we spread the news? I learned something this week that was interesting. I didn't know it before. I always thought Air Force One was an airplane, you know, that the president rode around in. And I learned this week that's not the case at all, that Air Force One isn't one specific plane, that Air Force One is whatever plane the president's on. It's not the plane that's special. It becomes special because who owns the plane? Now listen to what Paul tells them. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who's in you, whom you've received from God? You are not your own. You were bought with a price. Do you know if the President of the United States got stranded in Utah and he had to go back all the way to Washington in a crop duster, what they would call the crop duster? Air Force One. You were bought with a price. Being able to have sex with people, it can make you feel special for a while, but it's not nearly as special of knowing that you were bought with a price. And what Paul is talking about as a Christ follower, he's saying, God sent his son and allowed him to die on a cross for you. He demonstrated in the most dramatic way he could with the resurrection that there are no limits to his ability to overcome. That's how much you cost. And that'll make you way more special and feel way more special than anything that ever happened sexually. Or it will cause you to feel a specialist that will shape the way you see sex. Hey, our message to people is not to scold them. It's not to lay rules on them. They're not going around to people and, you know, lecturing them on their sexual practices. Here's our message. It's really super simple. Here's our message. You are so special that with this explosively powerful thing called sex, God will show you everything you need to know so it works right. That's our message. It's not to scold people, to lay rules on them, to put them down, make them feel guilty, or threaten them. The first words out of our mouth is like, I finally get how special I am, and it doesn't have anything to do with sex. And you can too. Now here's the bottom line. Everyone needs God's help on this one. Here it is. And the reason I wanted you to turn and say, you know, we all got issues. We have all got this wrong at some point. Let's just own it. We've all done it. We've all been in some situation. We've caused it, and we have all went through something. And Paul, in this bit of the letter, this is the way he finishes it up. He says, the physical part of you is not some piece of property belonging to the spiritual part of you. I love that. He's saying, you're not some piece of meat. God owns the whole works. Therefore, honor God with all your bodies. So here's the thing. And I was thinking about how we could wrap it up today. If my son is watching, I'm letting it down very gentle. I thought, well, how do you sum up honoring God? And I think I've got it. You know what honoring God means? Asking for his help. One of the best parts about my life is when my kids ask for my help. When the boys or the girls ask for my help, when they ask for me to do something, it's one of the best feelings that there is. And I don't know that I ever would have caught it until I got married and had children, because I think when I was single, I would have looked at it and said, oh, you know what? I'm going to be inconvenienced, or I'm going to have to sacrifice, or it's going to put me into a situation I don't want to be in. I probably would have looked at them asking me for help that way. And you know what? It doesn't feel like that at all. When they ask me for help, it's like one of the best parts of my life. One of the best things that ever happens to me is when my kids, the boys or the girls, say, I need your help. In fact, when I see them go through things and they don't ask for my help, it's kind of disappointing, because I'm like, I could help, I'm here, but they do it themselves, which is okay. But when they ask for my help, it feels so good. And I think that's how God feels. I think he's honored. When if there's ever a topic, there's so many people that are far from God, they stay away. They're like, God and I could never see eye to eye. He's just going to make me filthy. He's just going to ruin all my fun. If we could just say, listen, asking God for help is the way you honor him.